As Susan was transitioning, you talked about the South Carolina governor, and I couldn't help think about Meg's presentation, and if he would have been hiking on that Three Forks, you know, hiking a nature trail, he probably wouldn't have got so much trouble. So, a little plug for the... I wanted to... today we're going to be talking about a presentation that was given this last week. My research and training center had a State of the Science Conference in Overland Park, Kansas. It was a two-day event. The first day we just talked about science. The second day we really talked about knowledge transition, research to practice. And this is one of the presentations that we shared at that. And I want to acknowledge my colleagues, Craig Reveslow and Jackie Gonda. Craig, of course, being from the University of Montana. And this is a part of a systematic line of research. Last year, Craig was here and he presented a little bit on our pilot data. This year I'm going to talk a little bit about the results of our nationalized randomized CIL survey. And then next year we hope to present the exciting conclusion of this investigation, this long took for this investigation over time. With that, I don't have any disclosures to disclose. A lot of presentations we talk about PAR, participatory action research or community-based participation research. And I really strongly believe in that. And some people kind of just give lip service to it. We had several consumers involved. These are experts, people from independent living centers, advocacy. One was Michael Blatchford, a Native American. He's now deceased. But each of these individuals gave us some valuable information. I'll tell you how that kind of played out in just a moment. I want to acknowledge the our funder, National Institute of Disability and Rehabilitation Research, for this project. I'm going to give you just a brief overview, and then I'm going to kind of cover each one of these areas in more detail. I'm going to talk a little bit about the best practice competition that we did to really hear from the field what they thought were best practices when we think about participation. I want to talk about our instrument and how we drew upon several different sources to try to create this instrument that we used for this presentation. Talk a little bit about the data collection and then the results, and then we'd like to conclude with just a few next steps. So the best practices. One of the things we did early on, one of the very first things was we solicited applications from the National Council on Independent Living and the Association of Programs for Rural Independent Living, also known as Nickel and April. We had these large competitions and we asked what we'd like to have the centers submit what they thought were best practices to get consumers involved in their community and participation. And so they proposed those, and what we did is we selected 8 of these programs, and we paid for their way to present what these best practices were at both Nickel and April conferences. And the beauty of that, this helped provide some content and direction for the survey. Now we want to talk about developing the survey we used for this particular phase of the study. We used the members of those that submitted the best practices. Exemplary best practices became our consumer advisory committee. So we went right with the very best folks we could find in those competitions. So they became what we call a consumer empowered team. Very integral part of the research process. And it wasn't just coming in at the beginning and then, this is what we finished at the end. They worked we had regular meetings with them as they helped us think through and talk through the survey construction. We also looked at 704 reports. Now, if you talk to anybody in IL, these are dreaded. They're very much output-oriented, not outcomes-oriented. And they pretty much don't like them. But we wanted to look at the 704 anyway, because we thought there might be some items that might be appropriate to be looked at in this survey. And the consumer power team helped us shape that. We also looked at the ICF as far as the activities around looking at categories around activities and participation as well. And then Chiaki Gonda, we also looked at a randomly selected set of independent living center websites to see what kind of activities they were offering at their center, what kind of services were they offering. And so that also kind of gave us these multiple different points. It really helped us give us a better idea of what we might think of in terms of the construction of the survey. With that, we identified a total of 81 items for our survey, and these were across 13 different categories. And what I have here on the slide is the different categories and then the number of items under each one of those categories. Now, you'll see IL has four what they call core services: advocacy, housing, information referral, peer support, and the fifth kind of what they call emerging core services, deinstitutionalization. And we had 10 items for advocacy, housing, 6 items, independent living skills, 9 items, INR, 8 items, peer support, 6, transportation, also 6, employment, 7, recreation, 4, AT, 4, mental health, 3, healthcare, 2, interesting, and nursing home emancipation, and we had 2 items for that. And then we had 14 items under what we call CIL process dimension. Now you might say, what the heck is CIL process dimension, right? Anybody? What that is, because most of these other things are what you might think of as traditional services, right? Well, the CIL process dimensions, and this is kind of an epiphany for us as we're starting to go through the data, these are not the specific type of service, but how the services were delivered. Basically, the philosophy of IL, you know, consumer sovereignty or consumer control or choice. So those are really important dimensions, and we'll see that as this unfolds. So here's an example of a survey. And this, if any of you have ever seen the Concerns Report survey, Consumer Concerns Report, it's been around since 1980 probably, quite a while. But it's a similar type of thing. It has two different stems. One of the stems is, how important is it to you that you're center? And the other one is, well, how satisfied are you that you're center? So, for example, how important is it to you that your center works for the rights of people with all types of disabilities, chronic health conditions? And then you can either answer not applicable. In some cases, they may or may not, depending on what the service is. Or they might have a scale 1 to 4, not important to 4, very important. So we looked at both the importance scores and the satisfaction scores of these. And that's what I'm going to try to talk about in just a minute. So, data collection. We work with Nickel and we work with April. They were, again, our partners, as well as part of this process. We selected 90 CILs across the country to administer the survey. 65 CILs agreed to participate. Of that, 61 returned surveys. Now, that's a 93% response rate. That's pretty respectable, I think. Completed by over 420 CIL staff members. So we're going to talk just a little bit about the description of the respondents who did fill out these surveys. And so the top portion here, we have respondents by the impairment type. Of those, the percentage reporting, there was almost 37% that had a physical disability, they claimed. 14% psychiatric, almost 9% hearing, and visual was 8%. Other, 15.4%, and then those that did not designate or said they had no disability was 32.6%. Now, if we look at those who completed the survey by position type, most of them were filled up by independent living skills training specialists, about 25%. Consumer advocates, those are involved in consumer advocacy, 21%. INR, about 19%. Peer counseling, 10%. Only about 10% filled out by directors. And many times, if you know anything about ILs, they get surveys, 5, 6, 8, 10 a week probably. So that's why we work very closely with Nickel and April to help us to do some of the recruiting as part of this process. Now I want to just set up this slide for you a little bit if I can. We're looking at the top 10 importance ratings of the CIL staff of that survey of 81 items, what they think were the top 10 items. And the percentage indicates the percentage of total points possible. So the scale was 0 to 4, if you count the NA. That if each of the 420 respondents would have given it a 4, the total possible score would have been 1,680 points. So if you look at this first item, 97.4%, that equaled a total point score of about 1,636. So it was a pretty important issue to them. Now the areas highlighted, now in yellow, were what we call process dimensions, and I just defined what that was a little bit. And not so much what the service was, but how the services were delivered. So, an example, the first item is really a process dimension, right? Provide service in a way that empowers consumers to make their own choices. Then we had the second item, advise consumers about benefits they're eligible for. That was very, very important at 97% of the possible points. provide service in a way that encourages consumers to advocate for their own rights. That's one of the core. If you think of the heart of IL philosophy, that's it right there. Works for the rights of people with all types of disabilities. So this notion of really cross-disability, 96.8%. Uses partnerships with other agencies in the community to help consumers meet IL needs, 95.7%. This is one of our exemplary, at the very get-go, when we found these exemplary ILs, there's a place, it's called Heart of Texas, Heart of Central Texas Independent Living Center, HOCTIL, I think they call it. And one of the big deals they did a lot of networking in the community and connected with a lot of different individuals. Well, as part of that center, as they did that, it created more network relationships for the consumers. So if you're thinking about a job or an opportunity for some kind of internship or whatever, they had those connections there. Number six, provide services to help integrate consumers into the community once emancipated from nursing homes. 94.8%. That is a big issue, getting people out. Now, I have some other issues about that that I don't have time to talk about right now, but helps people with disabilities find the types and amount of personal assistance they need. Again, that's always a big, big issue, almost 95%. It senses the readiness and confidence level of new consumers. Sometimes when you have a new consumer come in, you can't just hit them with a bunch of different services. You really need to get to know, well, what's their level of readiness? And that was one of those process dimensions. Increases a community sensitivity about learning attitudes with people with disabilities. And then the last one, which is a process dimension, encourages community partners to provide services that are consistent with IL philosophy. So there was half of the top 10 were really not just services, but were really the notion of process dimensions. When we looked at the importance rating and how similar they were, we looked at both urban and rural centers as well. You know, what do we know about them? The rank order correlation of urban-rural centers was 0.88, and that suggests that the order rank order importance was very similar between them. Now, the top five strengths. We just talked about the top 10. I want to talk about the top five strengths for just a few moments. Again, the scoring is the same as we just talked about earlier, although the CCRM defines strength as the importance rating times the satisfaction rating. So if it has high importance and high satisfaction, that's a strength. So it advises consumers about benefits, 90.1%. Provides service in a way that empowers consumers. Again, you'll see this theme coming back, 87.2%. Provides service in a way that encourages consumers to advocate. Again, the IL philosophy coming in. Makes referrals to other disability support providers. So sometimes they will refer out to others, obviously. And use partnerships with other agencies in the community to help in consumers to meet IL needs, 85.1%. Now, we looked at the top weaknesses as well. Now, this yielded some interesting, okay, I can do it. Works with places of worship in their programs so that people with disabilities can participate to the extent they choose. Now, this is those where they issued a high importance but low satisfaction, 29.1%. Provides information about accessible medical services, providers with exam tables, only 26.8%. Now, to me, that was surprising, a little bit troubling. Provides education computer skills for workshops, 26.5%. Again, I thought that would be higher. Provides information about accessible community resources, centers, newsletter, or on a website, 26%. And works to increase accessibility of medical facilities and services, 25.8%. So let's look at satisfaction as a metric. Are there consistent differences across staff satisfaction ratings? We summed the satisfaction ratings across the top 20 items that ranked by the importance of ratings. A composite score based on satisfaction ratings across the 20 services rated as most important for increasing community participation revealed statistically significant differences between SILS at the top and at the bottom quartiles. At the mean of the first quartile was 2.79, the mean of the fourth is 2.30, with a p-value of less than 0.00. While these significant differences, we could detect differences between CILs in the first and fourth quartiles, suggesting the instrument is sensitive to naturally occurring differences between SILS. Well, where do we go from here? Next steps. We want to examine the validity of staff ratings on the participation level of CIL consumers. So if you have some centers that have very strong staff ratings on not only importance of the services, but their satisfaction level of the services. Our hunch is that maybe it might be that consumers that are affiliated with that center could potentially be more involved in the community, have higher levels of participation, compared to those who maybe don't have such a high satisfaction level. So we're randomly right in the process right now of randomly selecting 200 consumers from SILS in the present study, in this present study we're doing right now that we hope to maybe present next year. We want to examine the participation differences based on SILS satisfaction with services using a combination of Dr. Gray's core, Parts G, and then SPARC. And these have been modified not only to include mobility limitations, but also for some impairments with hearing and visual impairments as well. So before it was just all on mobility. So I think I'll stop there. There's our contact information. If you'd like to talk to Dr. Ravislett or myself later, we're happy to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
The big issue is training in the adult provider community. So part of that review process is going to be looking specifically at, you know, what are the issues for each segment of this population. I don't know if that really answers your question.
This is a question for Glenn. I'm Jeff McCubbin from Oregon State. I was a little troubled at the latter part of your presentation. You indicated the five least accessible opportunities, or at least that have all pointed to healthcare, or most of them pointed to healthcare. I'm interested to know what else might have been on the bottom half of that, and I'm interested in health promotion and physical activity opportunities in the community, and I was wondering whether your recreation-oriented questions got to that, and whether there's a lack of access and opportunities that in that domain that you can speak to.
Right. There was a number of items, and I think it speaks to a little bit of the challenge that IL has with the issue of health. And I mean, just one of the things we're doing, one of our studies we're doing right now with Charles in our center is looking at how we can increase access to health, access to healthcare. And so there are many centers that are really gravitating towards that. And one of the things that to me, it shows if there's a weakness in that, they're willing to at least look at that. And there's several people, there was a presentation done actually at the NICOL conference where there was one center that joined up just wanting to do this healthcare initiative to increase access. So I think there is a challenge there. And I think centers are looking for things that they can do to enhance that health access. Now, the other thing that's happening is with Living Well as well. There's several other programs that centers are trying to do with that. With the recreation, I can't recall, Craig, exactly. There's only a couple small items in that under the recreation side of things. But it's a little challenging, a little troubling.
Did you guys want to add anything? Okay.
Ryan.
Hi. Oops, that's loud. My name's Terry, and I'm from Illinois. My question is for the person from Florida. You talked a lot about how you're preparing the young people. Where's the involvement of the educational system? Where are the schools? Do they make this a part of the transition mandates? And if not, I think that that's an opportunity to prepare.
That is definitely one of our prime objectives, is to better integrate with the healthcare transition into the transition IEP process. We actually have developed, there are a couple curricula that were developed in Florida that are classroom curricula that can be delivered to high school students in special education that have to do with healthcare transition. So, I mean, there are a couple different strategies that we're using, and we're using it both at the state level and at the community level with engaging the local school districts in these coalitions. One is trying to introduce the curricula to the classrooms and to teachers. Another is the training. We're developing an online module very similar to what we have for the healthcare professionals. It's going to be targeted to teachers, and it's going to talk a lot about how to incorporate healthcare transition issues and health-related issues into transition IEPs. You know, things like, you know, does that young person know about health insurance? Do they have health insurance? Can they describe a condition? Do they make their own doctor's appointments? So a lot of those kind of, you know, daily living issues will hopefully be better addressed.
I have a question also that's similar to this last question. One of the things I like about what you've done is this issue of bringing in CILs, education, and Voc Rehab into the process, as you've done, and tried to create the advisory board. I know you had a very short period of time to work out the issues and come up with the program. My concern, I had two concerns. I wonder if you would address the issue of how you involve CILs, in the process. Because I've worked at several CILs in several areas of the country, and one of the biggest gaps is this gap between for transitioning children special ed to independent living or to advanced training and education. That's a huge gap at the CIL level. There's very little service going on. The other issue seems to me that you did address, and I wonder if it came up, was the nomenclature or the language that you use to discuss disability, because obviously you're in the healthcare environment, you're in children's healthcare, you're talking special needs and CILs, and to some degree special educators will discuss this in terms of disability.
Right.
So how did you parse the language so that you understood each other well, and you know, what was the issue with CILs and having to integrate and having to bring them in and get them involved in this process?
Right. Okay. So at the state level, when we were putting the statewide assessment together and developing the plan, we did have representation from somebody from the CILs within the state. And then on the local levels, I mean, this is really a big part of our plan is putting a lot of energy and effort into the local coalition building. And that's really the opportunity for local agencies, local CILs to become involved. So, you know, hopefully with these three pilots, that's just the start, and we're going to be developing these local coalitions throughout the state. So that's the first question. The second question, the whole issue with language and the definition of development or definition of disability. The initial proposal was legislation around young people with disabilities because it came through the Department of Education. Now, it's kind of morphed over time, and as you probably know, children with special health care needs is a much broader term than includes children and young people with disabilities, but it's not limited to that. So what we've tried to do is talk about young people with disabilities, chronic health conditions, and other special health care needs, so that it's inclusive. And that's what this program is. It's not just for the Title V kids that are transitioning into adult care. You know, that's eligibility based. This is for everyone that has any kind of condition or issue, whether it's a chronic health condition like asthma, and they need extra services for that, to somebody that has really complex chronic and or severe disabilities. So, I mean, that has been a challenge because you have, you know, different systems using different terms. And actually, in that legislative report, we talk a little bit about that and try to make it very clear that we're as inclusive as it can be.
Got about 5 minutes left. A couple of quick questions.
Suzanne McDermott at the University of South Carolina. I want to ask a question about the photo voice, Dr. Newman. That was a very good example. That was a wonderful example that you showed of getting the legislation passed, which we're all thrilled to have in South Carolina. My question is, were some of the participants in that study not clear about what kind of policy change they wanted at the end? They took pictures of their lives, they showed obstacles and barriers as well as positive experiences. What other kinds of outcomes did some of these participants identify other than legislation?
Wonderful panel. I would like to have everybody